Welcome to the Cal Talks podcast series. I'm Kelly Kluke from the studios of Coyote Radio and Advertising in the College of Arts and Letters on the campus of California State University, San Bernardino. We are a dynamic and caring community of students, faculty, and staff members united by a passion for the arts and humanities. Our college inspires students and prepares them for the rapidly changing cultural and employment environment of the 21st century. Our classes are taught by faculty who are experts in their fields, providing students with tools for success in a world that values written and oral communication skills, analysis, critical thinking, and creativity. Let's get started. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Daventry. Andrea is an assistant professor in the philosophy department here at Cal State San Bernardino, and welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
This fall semester was your first at CSUSB. What did you teach and how has it been to be here on campus?
Yes. So this semester I taught two classes, the Introduction to Ethics class and a new class here, which is Feminist Philosophy. So feminist philosophy is one of my areas of expertise. So I was really excited to introduce that one. We talked about what women's oppression is and why we should even think that it exists in our society today, given that women now have equality under the law and discrimination is illegal and women can get credit cards in their own name and all that. So we talked about some of the factors that arguably contribute to women's oppression, like beauty norms and feminine socialization, like socializing girls from a young age to be people pleasers and to not rock the boat and to focus on making sure other people are comfortable and have their needs met, potentially at their own expense, the prevalence of sexual violence, that kind of thing.
How did you get interested in that field?
There's a lot to it. I think from an early age, it was really just a matter of wrestling with, for myself, trying to figure out, I grew up in an evangelical Christian context, and there's a lot of emphasis on things like agape love and forgiveness and letting anger linger, that kind of thing. And that was something that I really prioritized for a long time. But as I got older, I started to wonder if this kind of care for others and concern about always expressing kindness to others could potentially interfere with my own respect for myself and being able to set my own boundaries. And I also wondered about potential gendered differences in how much these norms were actually prioritized in practice, because I felt like I kind of noticed patterns where women tended to emphasize these things more than men a lot of times in practice.
Rebel you. What is your background as far as growing up through high school, your hometown?
So I grew up in Florida in the Daytona Beach area, and it was a very touristy, beachy area. So most of my friends were really into the beach. I burn in 5 seconds. So I had to steer clear for the most part. But I did get really into music during that time because there was a lot of local music in my area. There was a really strong music scene. And we were also only about an hour from Orlando, and there was a lot of really great music stuff happening there. So and I also have my older brother to thank because he introduced me to a lot of the cool music.
What's his name?
Andrew. Got to give credit to Andrew for that.
Florida, from my experience being in radio for quite a while, Florida is a music mecca. Please share your educational background with us. Starting from high school, did you go straight from high school to college?
I did. So I went throughout elementary school, middle school, high school. I went to private Christian schools, very small schools. And I was always, the importance of college was always really emphasized for me. I lived with my mom and my brother growing up, and college was really important to my mom. It didn't really matter to her where you went to college, you just had to go. So I went to the community college near my house for the first 2 years, and then I transferred to the University of Central Florida after that, which was a huge shock because it's a massive school. I think it's the third biggest in the country. So going from my graduating class having 70 people in it to just this massive college, it was quite an experience. But that's when I started taking philosophy classes, and I really liked them. And that was kind of the moment where I realized I don't want to stop doing this. Like, I want to keep taking philosophy classes. I just felt like I couldn't get enough of it. So kind of at the last minute and without much guidance or any clear idea of what I was doing, I decided to just apply to graduate schools. And I got really lucky. I was accepted to the University of Florida, and I went there for my master's degree, and I still wanted more. So I applied to some PhD programs and lucked out again. And that's when I ended up at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and finally learned to love the outdoors, because it wasn't 100 degrees all the time. Right, exactly. So that's where I learned to love to hike and hang out in rivers, go rafting and kayaking and all that stuff.
What led you to CSUSB? How did you find out about the job? Was there a tip somewhere, or were you looking?
I got interested in teaching really early on in doing philosophy. Like, I started TAing when I was doing my master's, or, you know, working as a teaching assistant. And I loved it. I thought that it was just so rewarding, and it was so cool to be able to engage with students like that and kind of help them see the value of it and get excited about it with me. And that was when I kind of realized that's what I want to do if I can. But it is a really hard thing to be able to get into. Like, it's only the lucky few who really end up being able to get jobs doing this. So I wasn't confident that it would ever actually happen, but that was always my dream, is that I would get to have a teaching job where I really got to work with students. And when I saw the ad for CSUSB, it was really clear that it was a student-centered institution that emphasized engagement with students and providing students with opportunities. And that was something that I just loved. And when I finally got to come, I got to visit, I got to talk to the faculty here, and they made it clear too that the students are amazing and that the students are just so engaged and so excited to be here, and they really do just want to learn. That was really cool, because there's so many colleges around the country where that's not necessarily students' attitudes. It can be disheartening when students view you more as some, like, an obstacle that they have to defeat to get the grades that they think that they're kind of entitled to off the bat, maybe because they paid a lot of money to go there or whatever. But working with the students here, it's really clear that they're here to learn, and they just want to explore new ideas and grow. And it's such a great experience.
I love the students. I agree 100%. I work with them on a daily basis. It makes me so happy. Back step here. What was your dissertation on?
Yes, my dissertation was on personal autonomy and what it means for a person or their choices to be autonomous. Usually, autonomy generally is just understood as guiding the course of your own life. So it's often understood as, like, independence from certain kinds of influences that seem to undermine our own freedom of choice. Like, of course, any kind of explicit coercion would undermine our autonomy. Things like threats would undermine our autonomy. One thing that comes out in a lot of feminist philosophy is that it seems like certain forms of socialization can almost have, they can intuitively feel to us a lot like brainwashing does. Kind of like, you know, we think about the example of subliminal advertising as something that would, it's a kind of sci-fi scenario, but that's something that seems like it undermines our freedom of choice. And some feminists worry that certain forms of socialization do that too. So there's this really famous case that got me interested in this. It's a case from the philosopher Thomas Hill, and it's called The Deferential Wife. So the deferential wife is a woman who basically just does whatever her husband wants all the time. So she lives in whatever town he wants to live in. She dresses however he wants her to dress. She is friends with whoever he thinks she should be friends with. But the thing is, he doesn't force her. He doesn't coerce her into it. She likes it. She finds grateful fulfillment and satisfaction in the happiness that she causes for her husband. She feels really proud of the role that he plays, that she plays in their life together. It's a choice for her. She makes the active choice to submit to her husband. And this is a kind of puzzling case, because on the one hand, it seems like she is autonomous. She is making her own choices because she is freely chosen to engage in this kind of subservient life to her husband. But on the other hand, it seems like she's not fully autonomous, given that the choice she's made is specifically to do whatever he wants and to kind of ignore her own desires and the inclinations that she has. It seems like she's kind of disconnected her own will from her own feelings, and she's motivated by what he wants and what he feels instead of what she wants and what she feels. It's a kind of puzzling case that I really wanted to think more carefully about, and my dissertation was in large part exploring that kind of case. And in my view, she's not fully autonomous because of her deference to her husband, so I really wanted to explore that idea and try to explain it.
When I hear you speak about this, I think, wow, well, that was all women at some point. Well, maybe a few not, but mostly. Crazy, because it's not how you and I grew up. I grew up with a single mom, four kids, four daughters.
Right.
Four strong-willed daughters. please describe for us your favorite areas of research and teaching.
Yes. I like ethics a lot. I'm really interested in thinking about how philosophy can help us live better lives and be better people and like understand ourselves better. So I've been having a lot of fun teaching the Intro to Ethics class this semester. We've been talking about stuff that I hope is relevant to the students' lives. So things like the ethics of engaging on the internet, like how should we be engaging with people, stuff like cancel culture, or the ethics of swiping left, things like having sexual preferences or romantic preferences that are potentially shaped by systems of racism, for example. Like there's data on how certain ethnic groups get swiped left on more often than others. So how can our own kind of dating preferences potentially be playing into systems of racism or be like caused by it? We talked about consent in the context of sex, what it means to consent, what are some things that could undermine it. In the last unit of the class, we talked about self-respect and what self-respect is and this kind of paradox of self-respect, which is that on the one hand, it seems like the self-respecting person loves and accepts themselves exactly how they are. But on the other hand, it seems like the self-respecting person always wants to do better and is always striving to improve and to change. And these two ideas seem, at first at least, like they're in tension with each other. Like if you're happy with yourself the way you are, then how can you at the same time be always trying to change or improve? So the last few weeks of the class were spent exploring that, and I just love seeing the ways that philosophy can matter to my students' lives and actually help them and shape them as people. It can be a really emotionally intense course.
No, you engaged me just describing it, because it applies to everyone. Everything you just said applies to everybody.
A lot of what I teach is motivated by concerns and puzzles that I have that I'm trying to figure out, and I want to try to use philosophy to get answers.
On that, what is your favorite philosophy course to teach or your favorite philosophy class in the past you've been a part of, maybe even when you were a student?
I love teaching the sexual ethics class. This is a class that I kind of created when I was a graduate student at the University of Massachusetts. And for whatever reason, they let me teach it, which was really exciting for me. And I've just been teaching it as often as I can ever since. But it's, as with most of my classes, it's a very emotionally intense class. It tends to be very real to students and very relevant in ways that can be difficult. But we talk about a lot of stuff that I think is so important and fascinating. So the complexities of sexual consent and how things like deception can potentially undermine it. But at the same time, it seems like there are puzzles about when exactly deception might undermine consent. So trying to find that line, you know, for example, if someone lies about what their job is, or if they lie about how tall they are or something like that, we typically don't think that's consent undermining. But if they lie about something like a deeper feature of their identity or their feelings toward the person, like if they lie about their reasons for wanting to be sexual with the person, whether they love them, whether they're married. Some people do think that this actually undermines consent because the person wouldn't have done it if they had known the truth. So questions like that. We also talk about the possibility of sex that's not wanted, but that's still consensual. Like, is it possible to consent to something that you don't want? this seems like a possibility when it comes to a lot of other things, like making dinner for your family. It's usually something that a person doesn't really particularly want to be doing, but they do it anyway because they love their family, or, you know, it's an expression of care or something like that. So this at least raises the possibility that sex can be consensual but unwanted, but you might worry that there's certain harms that can still be present in that when it's something like sex, even if it isn't non-consensual, even if it isn't assault. And some authors have argued that consensual but unwanted sex is prevalent, especially on college campuses. So I think it's something that it's really important to talk about.
That's what I've been thinking as you've been going through this, is it's important for our students because they are living it, they're going through it.
Yes.
What do you like about living on the West Coast?
It has been such a cool experience moving here. Just seeing the kind of desert landscape for the first time was really incredible. My spouse and I made a kind of road trip here from the East Coast to the West, and we brought our two chihuahuas also. And it took a couple weeks to do because we really wanted to take our time, and we got to explore a bunch of different national parks and just see these incredible landscapes that are so unfamiliar to me from just living on the East Coast my whole life. I'm still growing up in Florida, which is completely flat. I'm still just blown away every time I look around and I'm surrounded by mountains. That's incredible. I currently live in Crestline, which is like up the mountain. So it's cold there right now. I'm sure it'll snow at some point soon. And it's really neat to be able to just drive to campus. And now all of a sudden it's warm and sunny.
How did you have that tip to move there? Did somebody tell you, or you just said, I'm going to live in the mountains if I go there?
Well, yeah. I mean, so before moving here, I was teaching at Western Carolina University. I was there for about 3 years. And that's in Western North Carolina in the Appalachian Mountains. And I loved living in the mountains. It was such a cool experience. So beautiful. And I felt like I wasn't really ready to give that up. So when I saw that I could live in the mountains here as well, I was immediately, oh, I'm doing that.
Well, you can thank the San Andreas Fault, because that's why they're there. Anyhow, I'm so happy for you. Yeah, our mountains are pretty cool. Let's talk about your hobbies. What are fun things you like to do?
I love being outside. I love hiking. I'm so excited that there are so many national parks nearby. I can't wait to check them out. And Crestline is a really beautiful place for hiking, too. It's nice when the weather's a little bit cooler. For me, that's my preference. I love to bake, and I love to try baking new and different things. And my spouse only likes plain chocolate chip cookies, so I can very rarely share with him. So I think my colleagues like my baking habits, too, because I end up bringing everything to campus.
I see you like music. What are some of your favorite artists and bands?
This is a tough one for me because it's so hard to pick. But a couple of bands that have been most impactful to me over the course of my life and that I still just continuously find myself going back to are Me Without You and Bright Eyes. They're both very lyrics forward, very focused on the meaningfulness of the lyrics. And I think that these bands contributed to my interest in philosophy from a very young age because they just got me thinking very early on and reflecting in ways that I think I wouldn't otherwise have. So very grateful to them. And at least for me, they are still great.
Aren't we lucky we're in arts?
Yes. But I also like, so I like punk music. I like the Misfits classic, especially the Danzig version. I also like Against Me, another example. And some more recent stuff that I've been excited about are the Illuminati Hotties, and which is also just a great name, and Boy Genius.
Finally, what do you want your students to take away with them after spending time in one of your classes?
I really want them to see how philosophy can help us be better people and how important critical thinking is for living a good life. I think it's really important. It seems to me like we live in a time when we're just bombarded with norms and expectations that are really actively harmful to people. So the kind of culture of social media is always, I think, painting a picture to young people of what their lives should look like and what they should look like and the ways in which they're falling short. But a lot of these expectations are just not rooted in anything real, and they're not actually worth pursuing. Things like diet culture or wellness culture is also, it just is a constant source of a sense of inadequacy and guilt in so many of my students, and feeling like they just can't live up to these standards. And there are just tons of examples of these. I mean, I think gender norms are another example of a kind of framework that can be really harmful to people because they feel like they're falling short when they don't live up to them. And I think philosophy gives us the tools to think carefully about these norms and expectations and really reflect on whether we think these are actually valuable or not. And it can be liberating to see that so much of what has been making us feel inadequate or been making us feel guilty isn't even something that we, upon reflection, care about. And then I think that gives us the opportunity to try to move away from it and reflect more on the things that we do think matter and think more critically and carefully about the life that we really do want to live and what that will involve. So my hope is that philosophy will help students understand themselves better and better frame their own goals.
That is fantastic. Thank you so much. We've been speaking today with Andrea Daventry in the Cal Talks podcast series. She is assistant professor in the philosophy department here at Cal State San Bernardino. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Glad you could join us for another episode in the Cal Talks podcast series. From Coyote Radio and Advertising in the College of Arts and Letters, I'm Kelly Cloquet on the campus of California State University, San Bernardino.